Unfortunately, with no new leads, no sign of two murder suspects from BC, the Mounties have announced they will begin scaling back the search in a remote part of northern Manitoba, an area we've been telling you about over the past week, probably an area I never thought I'd speak about until this story came to light. Now, they'll start scaling back over the next week. Doesn't mean the RCMP will stop looking, though.
To be clear, we are not ending this search. A number of tactical resources and specialized assets will remain positioned in the Gillam area and will continue the efforts to locate the murder suspects.
RCMP says it's canvassed every home, searched every abandoned building in the area of Gillam, and they've used the best technology, ATVs, drones, helicopters, planes. They had help from the Air Force to cover that dense landscape there. The Mounties say that's a tough place to find somebody who does not want to be found. Have the 18 and 19-year-old alleged killers, though, made their way to northern Ontario? Now, there's a story making the rounds this afternoon about a report of a suspicious vehicle driving through a construction zone 10:30 this morning. That's in Kapuskasing. One report describes those in the vehicle as young males in their 20s. The OPP writes in a statement today it cannot confirm the identity of the people in that vehicle that was occupied by two males. The OPP is continuing to investigate this incident and is actively looking for that vehicle. Obviously, so they can provide some answers. To me, it sounds a little mass hysteria, but...
Yeah, I was going to ask. You're a veteran newsman. We consider you the veteran newsman around here. When you hear about a couple of teenagers in a car that are spotted, or young men spotted in the car...
Well, that's the way these things go. We always talk about that with mass shootings, right? There's always multiple shooters. No, most often, 99%, it's one shooter. But people see through that, and I'll use the phrase hysteria. I know it's maybe a lesser version of that. They sort of see things that they want to see if they have those sorts of fears. Heck, a friend of mine wrote me last week and said that someone in Oshawa, she was reading her Facebook page, and she was talking about how they've locked the doors and, you know, we're safe for now. In Oshawa, that she was concerned about the missing individuals in northern Manitoba in Oshawa.
Yeah, so, I mean, and Kapuskasing's 25 hours away from Gillam, Manitoba.
And then when you really look, as we talked yesterday, when you really look at how the road system works and how most of it's accessible by plane... Quite often, you have to go down through Winnipeg to cross over the Ontario border, and then you would, you know, have to head back up to many of those northern Ontario communities. So it's not as easy as it sounds. But as we talked yesterday, if they slipped through the cracks somewhere four days ago,
it's possible
they could be there if they had stolen a car and no one noticed, and they were on their way before the checkpoints were set up. So we'll let you know how this turns out. But on the surface, to me, it just sounds like two sketchy dudes in a vehicle in a construction zone looking to steal some construction supplies in Kapuskasing.
Yeah, and the other part of it is, remember, we're not talking about two individuals where we know what a vehicle. We don't have a vehicle description.
No,
and that's part of it, right? For me, that's where the spidey sense goes off. I say, well, we don't even know what vehicle these two would be in. Think of how many 20-somethings you'd drive by in the summertime in that neck of the woods on a good day.
And the coverage this has received, as you talked about yesterday, the coverage it has received, it really has reached the point where I can't imagine. We see the pictures over and over again. I would think, walking down the street, if I gave someone a good look, and even one of them, not even together, I'd say, that looks like that guy. Unless they change their appearance, as you said, shave their head, you know,
sure.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, which so much that's unknown.
You would think would be a thing.
Yeah.
If you were in that situation.
That's what we've gotten to, sightings in northern Ontario.
Let's talk a little bit about St. Mike's. This one surprised me.
Yeah, St. Mike's College, the Catholic private boys' school in Toronto, wrote this back in December. We have made the difficult but necessary decision to cancel the junior and varsity football seasons at St. Mike's for the 2019-2020 academic year. That followed a hazing scandal, led to 7 students from the school. They were expelled. They were charged by police. But so much for that difficult but necessary decision. The school announcing on its website it's going to follow through on a recommendation from an independent review committee back in May, and it's going to reinstate the football program this fall instead, a year early. School writes, after much discernment and collaboration, it's reinstating the football program. It'll implement measures designed to ensure all students who participate in the football program can succeed in an environment that respects human dignity and equity for all, free from unsafe activities such as hazing or bullying. We asked St. Mike's to speak with us about this decision, to give us more details about these measures, concrete measures. What are you really doing? Big surprise, it referred us to some prior meetings, told us there's nothing new since then, and refused to do an interview.
Do you get the sense they haven't learned much?
I get the sense they haven't learned anything.
Okay.
I get the sense that football is a very popular program, with a lot of affluent individuals as parents at that school, and they've decided, no, we wanted to start now.
And sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say quickly, do you sense a group discussion that was in part, why let a few bad apples ruin the bunch? This is tradition, that type of thing?
I think so.
And, you know, I mean, the severity of the charges we're talking about, we're
pretty
not
serious stuff.
Yeah, we're not going to forget about that.
Sexual assault allegations, three separate incidents. Of course, the most famous one, the football team, and we've talked about. Yeah. It's not a joke, and you would think the punishment was, okay, well, this got so out of hand that football's canceled the rest of this year and next year as well, that was sort of a sufficient, let's get our head in order, get these kids back on the right track, and then return to athletics. But apparently not.
Even if the argument is, well, you don't understand how important football is to the school. You don't want these kids to be punished. I'm sorry. Then you're just screaming to me. You have no idea the severity of what we're talking about.
And we've had that impression since day one.
And they've changed, but they've changed people. They've changed people who are running things, and the culture seems to remain pretty much the same.
I would argue that the culture that you're talking about is a group of people that are having the exact same discussion that you just initiated about us, that we, the outsiders, don't understand this deep-seated tradition.
That's how they presented it.
As is our want to do, we'll do what we wish, and we don't have to tell you anything about it. So nothing to see here, move along. And they're right, right?
I mean, it's a stereotype. This is exactly how you'd expect an affluent private boys' school to react to this scenario, is exactly how it's played out from day one.
I may have missed this. This might have come out when I was away, but this would be an interesting thing for me to find out, or maybe you guys could find out. Is enrollment down at St. Mike's?
I'm not sure. They would tell us.
Well, I mean, you know, right. But even if a parent was able to tell you, or somebody in the administration, maybe off the record, because that would be interesting to me. Like, are the earlier grades just people saying, nope, this isn't the place for my kid, now that we are that year removed or so?
Try and find a parent, by the way, that's not screaming at our reporters, get a real job.
Spitting at them.
You dirtbags and spitting at them.
Yeah.
Try and find one of those parents. Not them so much.
Jay harkens back to such a brighter day for our relationship.
Yeah.
I think that would be interesting, because maybe that's one of the reasons they're bringing this back faster. That's where my head went.
And that's where my head is, too. Yeah. There are powerful people who have children going to that school who say, forget all that. Wasn't my kid involved. I want football back.
And we need more students to come in. Yeah. Football was sort of the interesting thing to get the enrollment numbers up. Yeah, I'd be curious on those numbers. This story, wow. You know, I kind of feel for the people who had to put this all together and figure this out today.
And it was a long list.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they kind of admit it doesn't make a whole difference. But commission has made 91 recommendations. That's a lot of recommendations after examining the country's first known healthcare serial killer, Elizabeth Wetlaufer.
This is serial killing. Like other serial killers, Wetlaufer committed the offenses for her own gratification and for no other reason. It was not mercy.
Says systemic failures and long-term care allowed Wetlaufer to carry out her crimes without raising suspicion, almost for a decade. Those failures stem in part from a lack of awareness on the risk of staff members deliberately harming patients. Wetlaufer, she's serving a life sentence. She pled guilty to 8 murders involving patients. She used insulin overdoses, attempted to kill 4 others. Among the recommendations, measures to raise awareness of serial killers in healthcare, make it harder for staff members to divert medication. Homes must maintain a complete disciplinary history for each employee.
This finding is significant because it tells us there's no simple fix to avoiding similar tragedies in the future.
Yeah, it's no simple fix, but it's not a cheap one as well, the ones they've come up with. One part of this report calls on the Ministry of Health to give each facility a grant of $50,000 to $200,000 to improve oversight of the administration of drugs. It also says more deaths involving patients in long-term care facilities should be investigated.
And it's a tough one. I was hearing you talk about this earlier in one of your newscasts, and you know, you think to yourself, how do you police these people when they're alone a lot of the time? And you can't, it's not a situation like a cop situation where, you know, you're in partners, you're in pairs. A lot of these people are just alone with your loved ones, alone with elderly people that, you know, a lot of the time don't have ways of speaking for themselves.
Well, one I should have included, unannounced spot checks, including weekends, day and night. They pop in and see, what are you up to? Suddenly come around the corner at 2 a.m. in the morning. That's when you get a real idea of what the nurses are up to. But I'm not trying to simplify it, but evidently it was the insulin. Let's start with that. Let's start with the drugs. And you have to sign everything out. And there's someone you have to go through to prove and have itemized the requirements for each. Someone that can go
kind
over
of shocking that wasn't already there.
Yeah, and to go over it and say, wait a second, this much insulin this person was taking out, this wouldn't be necessary for this individual or this patient. It feels to me like there's almost administrative aspects that would somewhat fill the gap here. We'll see where we go from here. It's a lot of money they're asking for, up to 200 grand per facility at a time when we're talking about we don't have money for autism.
We can barely keep these facilities open
and
running up to snuff.
And is it going to drive costs up for what's already a pretty expensive thing to do for your loved ones?
This I didn't see coming either.
Yeah, it's going to be an inquest into the death of Sami Yateem. Now, this is mandatory. It's under the Coroner's Act. So it was almost 6 years ago to the day, the 18-year-old, you'll recall, he was gunned down by Constable James Frisillo. That's after Yateem refused to drop a knife and had been threatening people on a streetcar. Now, the regional supervising coroner for Central Region says the inquest will look into the circumstances of what happened. Then the jury may make recommendations aimed at preventing future deaths such as this. No date has been set for these proceedings yet.
Did you see this coming?
I should have, because it is standard. I'm surprised it took this long, but maybe they've been waiting for the
waiting for it
to die down,
waiting for it to
settle, and then say, okay, now let's look into this with a clear mind and not the emotion that surrounded the trial and the act itself.
We've also got another update on a story we've been focusing on quite a bit here on the show.
Yeah, Jay has a connection to this. Yeah. It was last Thursday night. It was just before 11 p.m. near Queen and Woodbine in the Beaches. The opening night of the Jazz Festival just wrapped up. Dylan Cann was walking his eight-week-old foster puppy. A young man walks up. Apparently is annoyed because he felt the event was too loud for this dog. And when Can told him, no, take a hike, and he turned around to walk away, the accused allegedly stabbed him four times in the chest. Now, police have made an arrest in this case, so he's off the street at this point. 19-year-old Michael Job of Toronto is charged with attempted murder, possession of a weapon, four counts of possession of a prohibited weapon. The last one stands out. Four counts, we asked police. Did he have four weapons on him?
There were additional weapons and more than one.
Yeah, not much of an answer. And actually, the victim himself provided us with a bit more of an answer. He speculated that maybe they found those when they searched his home. It wasn't so much he had the weapons on him at the time. Heck, he had the knife. He did the damage. What more was needed? But they won't tell us what those other weapons are. So the showgram also had the victim on, Dylan. He revealed he's bumped into this guy before, many times before.
I go to this coffee shop, you know, two, three times a day for a coffee in the beach. And I met with the detectives there yesterday because it was just a convenient location to meet. And I found out an hour and a half ago that this guy works at that coffee shop and has served me multiple times.
Just shocking to think someone you bump into at a coffee shop, he works there, you have a conversation, and one day you think he's punching you in the chest, and instead he's stabbing you four times within 2 millimeters of your heart.
Yeah, he's really lucky to be alive. It's a scary story. And even more interesting, and you know, in a macabre way, when Mike initially heard this story, I thought for sure it wasn't local. It was someone that came in from another part of town. It just feels like one of those random, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Criminal element.
Yeah.
But I mean, criminal elements
trouble.
Are obviously everywhere. And then to find out that the guy was working right in your own neighborhood, living at, you know, I found out like living pretty much near me, not the victim, but the attacker.
Suspect.
The accused, yeah.
I mean, when you take the aspect of, was it about the dog? But my first instinct is, was he under the influence of something? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he was on some sort of narcotic. Was he drunk at the time? Because it just seems bizarre. It was like the dog was almost an excuse just to lash out in that moment.
Yeah.
So, well, there you are.
Yeah, and again, it speaks to the idea of even interacting with complete strangers. You know, do you even go further in that conversation, or you just ignore the person?
I don't know about you. We were walking home last night. We were at a friend's house, and we walked by a guy who looked to be in a bit of distress. He was talking, but he wasn't into a Bluetooth. It was a conversation going on he was having by himself. And we walked past him, and then we got a few feet past him, and I turned around and I looked at him. And my wife said, do you find yourself doing that more now when you walk at night? I said,
interesting.
You mean turning around and looking at people? I said, yeah, I actually do. Now that you bring it up, I don't think I'm alone. I think a lot of us do it now. We pass by someone, and we turn around to make sure that they're not turning around. It's just, is it paranoia? Is it just safety? I don't know about you guys, but I do.
But for me, it's the balance between I don't want to be disrespectful to another human being. So often when I fall past someone in that situation and if they address me, I want to at least give them the acknowledgement of looking in the eye and saying, well, you know, what is it you're asking me at this moment?
Yeah.
I hate that sort of ignore speed past as if you don't exist. But things like these, you want
make
to
you think
past.
Twice about it.
Yeah, go to the other side of the street.
I also would say that, you know, just to your point, it used to be that you get a particular vibe from people, but it's not so much. Yeah, it's not so much the same thing as it used to be. More with Dave McKee and his views on the news in just 60 seconds.
6:16.
Ryan and Jay here on The Rush. Dave McKee is here with his views on the news. I heard some of this last night during the Democrat. Did you watch the Democratic debate? Are you a big into the American debate, guys?
No, not really. There's too many of them in
it. You go home,
take
a shower, take clothes off, get comfy, watch the debates.
Play video games, watch Netflix. Okay. You know?
Rinse off the day's news.
Yeah, exactly. The filth.
I watched almost all 3 hours of that last night.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I heard the big bombshell was Elizabeth Warren. She had that one line to the
it
other.
It is so good, though.
She just dropped him right
she
there.
She basically said to the guy, because he's talking about how you can't do this and you can't do that. And she's like, you know, it's weird that you make all this effort to run for president to tell everybody what you can't do and what's not possible.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing. But and the guy's look on his face was just like, oh, yeah. Damn, she scorched me.
Owned. Anti-Obama.
I'm just going to leave now. You can clear my podium out. I'm good. But a lot of it was about Canada's drug system.
Yeah, Donald Trump, he wants to buy up all our cheap drugs. This Trump administration says it's going to create a way for Americans to legally and safely import lower-cost prescription drugs from our country, reversing years of refusals by health authorities, not to mention all the talk about our system is horrible. Ooh, we can't go with the national health care plan sort of thing. No, we'll just take advantage of ours. Amid a public outcry, there's been a public outcry over high prices for life-sustaining medications. Then now our country's health minister says the federal government is in touch with U.S. officials to discuss this plan, describes this as further evidence of Canada's commitment to more affordable prescription drugs. Statement says Ottawa is constantly monitoring the Canadian drug supply and will work closely with health experts to better understand the implications for Canadians to avoid any adverse effects on our supply or any effects essentially on our costs as well, that we'd see the costs go up. But really interesting to have, I've never heard of this before, such an approach to say, oh, we'll just buy off another country.
I thought we're Americans who went to Mexico for the cheap drugs.
Yeah. It's different.
Oh, they're not so welcome there anymore.
Yeah, not to the thing. But the pharmacists have come out and said, well, no, we don't have that kind of supply. We have a supply for our country. You know, we know what we're going to deal with on a year.
Get your own Lipitor.
Get your own stuff. Because that's the real issue here. It's not about making it easier for Americans to buy drugs in other countries. It's about fixing the system within your own borders and not having the drug companies control everything, which they do.
I mean, is there a means where they're making drugs in our country at a cheaper cost? If so, then they increase supply, and then it increases our GDP, increases our over economic prosperity if they're buying more drugs off companies here that can produce them cheaper.
Well, I think the companies are all interchangeable. Are
That's
they not?
What I'm wondering.
Yeah,
if they're in the States and here as well, are they just selling them cheaper here because it's, you know, it's our own government that's sort of bringing down that price?
Yeah, exactly. We're, you know, bringing down that price because we have a different kind of healthcare
system.
That's
why. So that's why they're cheaper.
That's
it's
why
not
they're
so
cheaper.
Much the cost.
No. Yeah. I mean, the drugs are the same to be made in the United States as they are here.
Well, we do the stories all the time. The one where the, you know, a child has some special form of cancer and it costs $20,000 a day to survive.
A lot of those, though, are the rarity of the disease mm-hmm. or ailment that's affecting the patient, right? Because it's not in the drug company's best interest to keep a big supply or make expensive drugs when they know that there's only a handful of people that are going to need them. When it comes to the regular day-to-day stuff, which is what they're talking about, even insulin, that was brought up a lot last night. That's something that the United States has to figure out on their own. Don't come taking our drugs.
No, unless, as I say, unless there's a way that there's certain companies that can produce more of certain drugs, they have the ability, we still pay the same, our supply remains, and then we can profit from selling to the Americans. I'm all for that then.
But again, I trust the pharmacists on this. They say, no, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not a thing. Yeah, don't go taking my drugs. It's a Elton John Kiki D song that they didn't make.
1976.
Yeah. Let's talk. Well, I want to hear this Halton story from you.
Halton, I didn't bring Halton in. I torched
it. Oh, you didn't. Well, good.
I'm sorry.
Then I don't want to hear it
anymore.
They
printed out too early.
What do you think about Aaron Sanchez then?
Well, we could do Halton quickly. I know it off the top of my head. So anyways, Halton police, what they've decided on 10 cruisers, they're going to install side cameras. It sits on the roof of a cruiser. And then the catch is they catch you in the act of distracted driving. So when they drive by and you're texting away, they actually have that video proof that shows, no, you weren't looking at your lap for a second, because that's what's happening. They're losing a lot of these court cases because they say to the judge, I looked at my lap for the second. You can't disprove that. Judge says, well, in some
Reasonable
scenarios,
doubt.
Yeah, I'll let you go. So they've already laid 1,000 distracted driving charges this year, but they figure this will be the one that really ensures convictions each and every time.
Good idea.
Yeah, stop texting and driving.
See, everybody's on my.
It's a really simple solution.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to do something.
It is the thing now, and you see it all the time. I've been on the road many times and go, what is this guy doing, and why is he in the other? Is he drunk? You get beside there, face buried in his lap.
It's the red light thing that gets me now. Most green lights start with someone beeping at someone.
You're right.
To get moving.
You're right.
And it's the exact same thing every time. And it's the person behind you yelling, "Get off your effing phone."
Pretty much.
It's true. Yeah. I'm that guy yelling that.
Aaron Sanchez looked like 2016 Aaron Sanchez in his last game, and apparently it was his, last game.
Now we get rid of him. Yeah. Just like, he looks good, sell him. Sell him right
now. Sell high.
It's like
sell
a stock
high.
That goes up by half a cent. You're like, just sell it.
Jim Cramer's hitting the big button.
Yeah, so Aaron Sanchez, he's gone, which I'm sorry to see. Such promise in the beginning. Toronto has traded Sanchez and Joe Biagini to the Houston Astros. Sanchez, he struggled this season, 3-14 record. He has an ERA over 6. That's actually worst in the majors if they've pitched 100 innings. Looked better in his last few starts, though, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And he's only 26 years old. You know, word is Houston will move him. And why we couldn't do this? I actually don't find this a great deal. I hope I'm wrong. Because Houston's the talk, they'll move him into the bullpen back where he started in Toronto, get his confidence back up. You do an inning here, two innings there. Man, heck, the guy could do 3 innings of middle relief if you needed him when somebody has a bad outing. But his health issues, those blisters, which kept reappearing, maybe that's never going to disappear from him. Remember, didn't he blame the balls here or something like that at one point in Toronto? It was the new baseballs.
Yeah, I mean, some of the excuses he's come up with over the years. Not.
Yeah, so.
Was it finger blisters? I'm not familiar.
Yeah.
From his
pressure.
That's what he would say? Yeah, from the pressure. Bullets. I think he broke a nail, too. There's certain aspects of that.
Like an infection or something?
We get some kid, Derek Fisher, in return. He apparently has good power and speed, but he struggled in the major league, so we'll see how it works out. I mean, to me, it doesn't seem the greatest trade at this point.
Does it bode well when Dave's describing it as, we get some kid?
Well, he's jumped around a bit and hasn't really, maybe they can give him just that extra push he needs to be good.
Listen, I have no doubt that Sanchez may find a new career and resurrect himself in Houston. I think this is the right decision to keep him in the bullpen for a little bit, bring his confidence back somewhat. This is the end. You know, baseball's now got this trade deadline going on,
yeah,
July 31st. So there's a lot of movement if you're a baseball fan. And I think when you look at the Toronto Blue Jays, they're not going to be great next year or the year after. But watch out in a few years' time. Because that infield is phenomenal. They're going to have great young kids that are going to grow up together around the diamond. They're going to have a lot of professional experience under their belts, and they are super marketable. And that's what the Jays are counting on.
I just don't think they have that much time. I feel like for the fans, we'll take maybe an 80-80 season next year. But the next season after that, we kind of expect some winning.
It's baseball.
Well,
these are the most patient fans you could possibly imagine. They're going to sit and watch 9 innings of nothing happening for the most part. Of course, they got all kinds of time.
I don't know.
You should do color commentary.
I should. These fans been here 8.5 innings and they've seen absolutely nothing. Eating dollar hot dogs and dollar bears. Sure, they're stinking and they're full, but boy, is this ever a craptastic day for baseball. 3-2 count, pitcher in. Dave McKee, always
Thanks,
a pleasure.
Guys.
Member of our broadcast team. Here at the field. We've got lots more to come, don't we, Jay?
We do indeed. Warren Buffett, that's what you need. More advice from the rich on how young your kids should be when you start teaching them about financial literacy. That when we come back.